As the children skedaddle and the ladies smell their beautiful flowers, I just want to ask you a question. On your calendar, on your phone, on your electronic day timer, what is that date that you have circled and starred with big words on it? What's the date you're looking forward to? Maybe it's a day on your calendar that has nothing on it. Is it a graduation? Holidays? Is it the first day in the boat? The first day up at the trailer? Doing that work that you need to do at the cottage? Is it a day that just has cake in it? What's the day, if you can think of a day, of one day that you have on your calendar that is the day you're looking forward to? As John Penner said this week, a carrot that draws us into our future. What is that date? What is that thing that draws you to what you're looking forward to? As you think about what you're looking forward to, what you're hoping for, what you're planning for, let me put it in a little different way. Are you looking forward to Jesus being the rock of your salvation? Or do you just like him as a pebble of spiritual familiarity? Do you think that in my life I'm looking forward, enjoying being the sheep of his pasture, or just an old goat? Don't answer. Do you look forward to sitting down at a banqueting table, or is quarter chicken dinner white with fries or liver and onions at the Bo Peep enough for you? Do you think that in my life, I'm really looking forward to, hoping for, marked on my calendar, the day that God is going to lift me up to heavenly places? Or am I just hoping for a world tour of the seven wonders? Do you really own the reality that the Lord is yours and you are his? Or are you part of some other group that you like to be known as? The Granite Club, Illuminati, the International Association of Disgruntled Loafers. What is it that you look forward to, that you are defined by? This is a very special month for us. This is Mission Month. Go time. It's go time for us as a church. And a reminder that you also have a mission. It's go time for you. All of us, we've been discussing, have a mission in our lives. We live it. We are it. God also has a mission for us. And we have a mission collectively of what we do as a group. In various groups that you're part of, there's a mission dynamic that we're part of. Today we're going to look at the fact that mission is future-focused and counterintuitive. Mission is both rewarding and exhaustive. Now, this is Mother's Day, so those of you that are moms know that with the territory of being a mom comes exhaustion. So if you are a mom, or have been a mom, or had a mom, or know someone who is a mom, you know that parenting is exhausting. So maybe there's a commonality here as we look at Mother's Day and our mission in terms of this dynamic of exhaustion, or our mission being exhaustive. Well, one of the ways that moms get a break is in the title of the book that we're looking at, is when men step up and, as the title of the book says, he brews. Now, some of you, I know that joke just never gets old. You men, step up to your role and be a one who he brews. And that's the book you can turn to in your phone or electronic media, or you can look it up on the screen as well, too, as we look at the book of Hebrews. Chapter 11. We've been looking at this chapter, and when we look at it, we see that the first line in many of the verses in this chapter is by faith. 23 times the author says by faith. And the very first verse in chapter 11 says this: "Now faith is the confidence of what we hope for, an assurance of what we do not see. Now, I don't know about you, but I find that definition of faith really challenging, complex, mystifying. Hoping for what you do not, having confidence in what you hope for, and having assurance of what you do not see. But you see, the author of Hebrews gives us specifics of what this means by faith. So let me just catch us up, because we're going to be looking at verse 33, but let's just catch up for a minute, because this is what it says in the first 32 chapters. Noah, in holy fear, in faith, built an ark, became heir of righteousness, that's keeping with faith. Abraham, when he was called, he obeyed, he went to his home in a promised land like a stranger in a foreign country. Sarah was enabled to bear children by faith. Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau by faith. Joseph by faith, 430 years ahead of time, Joseph by faith spoke about the exodus of the Israelites from Egypt to their own land. By faith, Moses chose to be mistreated along with the people of God rather to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin, and he left Egypt. So he gives us definitions, so it helps us to process this dynamic of what does by faith mean? Because certainly not everything we hope for is going to happen. Not everything that we have assurance for is going to come to reality. That's our lives as human beings. So let's look a little deeper at what this by faith means. The author continues after saying all these things about the people in the Old Testament and says this. And just let's read it together so we understand the words as the author writes them. And what more shall I say? I do not have time to tell about Gideon, Barak, Samson, and Jephthah, about David and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, gained what was promised, shut the mouths of lions, quenched the fury of the flames, escaped the edge of the sword, whose weakness was turned to strength, and who became powerful in battle and routed foreign armies. Women received back their dead, raised to life again. I don't know about what you think about reading those words, but there's power in those words. When we think of faith, at least when I think of faith, this is pretty neat from a definition point of view. My faith, I hope, would do things like conquer kingdoms, administer justice, gained what's promised. Well, that's faith. To shut the mouths of lions. This is Daniel when he was put to death, they thought, by throwing him to the lions. Shut the mouths of lions. Quench the fury of the flames. Escape the edge of the sword. Who survived death. Whose weakness was turned to strength. Who became powerful in battle and routed foreign armies. Women receiving back their dead, raised to life again. I don't know about you, but that's the upside of faith. That's the championship part of faith. Let me put it into perspective from a mom's point of view. Being a son, I guess I can maybe postulate what my mom thought about in terms of this passage. By faith, conquered laundry, administered justice between the 2 and 4-year-old, escaped the sword of worry and sickness and tragedy, whose weakness was turned into strength. Supermom, she became. Had power in battle to teach homework beyond her understanding, to guide in areas that she had no experience, to gain what was promised, to gain a home that grandchildren love to visit and then leave again. When we think of faith in this context, oh yes, this is the faith I want. Conquer kingdoms. I know there's a bit of male language here. I know some of you ladies think, I don't know about routing armies or shutting mouths of lions. I just want to have a good community that I live in where people love me and I'm committed to them and we live in peace. But these are some powerful definitions of faith. Truth is, it's not the end of the passage. The passage goes on. So let's read together what it continues to say here. Here's the fullness of faith. Let's read together. There were others who were tortured, refusing to be released so that they might gain an even better resurrection. Some faced jeers and flogging, even chains and imprisonment. They were put to death by stoning. They were sawed in two. They were killed by the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, destitute, persecuted, mistreated. The world was not worthy of them. They wandered in deserts and mountains, living in caves and in holes in the ground. These were all commended for their faith, yet none of them received what had been promised. Since God had planned something better for us, so that only together with us would they be made perfect. You see, when we think of this word called faith, we are narrow-minded when we think it's just the first part of the passage. I'm too simplistic when I think of just the power of God doing what I want. And all of the rest of this passage, which is bigger than the first part, is talking about by faith. And it's complex in my mind. I can't quite understand. How do you go about by faith being tortured? How do you, through faith, refuse to be released, face jeers and flogging, chains and imprisonment? How do you face death by stoning or being sawed in two through faith? What kind of faith is that? Well, it's faith in God. How do you go about destitute, persecuted, mistreated? How do you do this by faith? How do you live in caves? Goes on in 39 and says, these were all commended for their faith. By whom? People living around them? No. By God. This is the dark side of faith. And all of you have experienced it. All of you have in some ways. It's sobering. And from a mom's point of view, and I could listen to the story of you moms, I know that you've faced heartbreak. And you face struggle and disappointment. I know that for some of you moms, you can look at this passage and say, yeah, there have been dark nights, and maybe it's not death, but it sure feels like the breaking of my heart. The dark side or the sobering side of faith. When I think about this side of faith, I think of my mom. So let me just tell you a story. August 30th, 1987. It was the last day that I would be in Ontario. Sorry, the last weekend I would spend in Ontario before I went out to Bible college. Bible college out in Calgary, Baptist Leadership Training School. My parents had chosen for me to go to Baptist Leadership Training School because they wanted me to change my choices. And on that Saturday night, as I took my girlfriend at the time out for our last date before I would go to Calgary, I borrowed my mom's red Mustang sports car. I wasn't really able to use it very many other times, but I got it that night. Took my mom's red sports car, got it all shined up really nice, cleaned up, and my girlfriend and I went out for supper. And you know how it is, those of you that are married. I took a little longer saying goodbye than I should have. Broke my curfew. And by the time I was leaving my girlfriend's driveway, it was about an hour after curfew. And in my household growing up, an hour after curfew couldn't really be explained away. My father was one of the first real estate agents in the county to have a cell phone in the car. It rang a few times. I just ignored it. I was driving home from my girlfriend's house, country roads. I was heading down the 12th line to our home, about 15 kilometers to home. I was doing 90 kilometers an hour, or maybe more than that. And I was traveling along this dirt road, this gravel road, about 1:15 in the morning. My father had this habit of coming to look for us when we were out late at night. He just couldn't sleep at night, so he would come the direction that we were going. I knew this, and I wanted to meet him closer to our house than further away. Anyways, as I traveled along, something distracted me in the field. I think it was just a parked tractor. Something distracted me, and I began to fishtail in my mom's sports car, and I was almost slowed down when I hit the grass of the 8-foot ditch beside the road. And I slid and flipped upside down, sliding for a while before I stopped just before a culvert. Wearing my seatbelt, I had to figure out a way upside down. It's actually really tough when you're upside down to actually figure out how to take off your seatbelt. Upside down, I had to figure out how to take off my seatbelt, drop onto the roof of the car, and crawl out. And my first thought was, I wonder how I can borrow a tractor from the closest farmer to pull this sucker out. Oh, I'm sure it will flip right over, no problem. I went to the closest farmhouse and knocked on the door and woke the guy up and asked to use his phone. I first asked if I could borrow his tractor. He said, why don't you use my phone? I said, I'd rather use your tractor. And he said, you're Ken Park. I know your father, I know your telephone number. Why don't we just call your dad? He called the police, then my father. When I walked back to the car, so they could find it in the ditch, the police arrived first, which was a good thing. As I sat in the back of the cruiser, my father then showed up. My father's not at all a violent man. And we never at all in our childhood ever felt threatened by him, but he took that club from the police officer's belt. Before the police officer knew what was going on, he grabbed the club from the police officer in the back of the police car and said, what do you think you're doing? You could have killed yourself. You see, all the time during my youth, my father was saying, slow down, boys, or you're going to be upside down in a ditch somewhere. My brother and I both fulfilled that prophetic statement that my father made. I had to then go home with my father and face my mother and tell her that her sports car was upside down in an 8-foot ditch. I felt lower than low. Went to bed. Next day, got up, we went to church. Little did I know that my parents had invited friends of mine and my girlfriend over for lunch to celebrate the fact that I had gotten my pilot's license and my birthday and had a beautiful airplane birthday cake. It didn't taste quite as good with the extra helping of guilt that I had on the side. I thought at that moment that, Mom, you don't need a guy that's going off to Bible college. You need someone that's going off to reform school. I'm sure that my mother at that point realized that was one of her dark moments. Not because of her red sports car. Although I heard about it many times afterwards. That her car door didn't shut quite right after the accident. It didn't quite smell the same after the accident. You see, my mother has lived her life with faith in the day and faith in the night. So let's just take some practical application out of this. If you'll do this with me, I think it's a fun thing to do. Two weeks ago, we looked at this dynamic of the fact that if you take a look at a clock and you think of 12 noon being your perfect or ideal mission, it's worship of God. And then all around the clock face, you can take that and draw it on a piece of paper. Family, friends, church, workmates, neighbors. You see, as my hands pass by you, it's like a clock. As a clock moves through its hours, it goes by all the times. In your own life, you have a community that you live in. And your hands pass by them all the time. So we talked about this dynamic of praying for, caring for, in word and deed, those people that are in your community. Challenge you to do that. But this morning, let's go on and do this. We've been looking at this dynamic of the world as our mission field. And truthfully, the world is half in dark and half in the light at all times. Just to make it clear for you, the truth is you're living on this planet and you're at sometimes in the dark and sometimes in the light. I don't know how they did this. I didn't select this picture based on this, but it still appears here that Toronto is the center of the universe. Right there, Toronto. It's as bright as brighter than New York City. You live half of your life in the day and half of your life in the night. And the truth is, our faith is exercised in the day and exercised in the night. It's the fullness of faith when we understand we have faith in God as we exercise it for the things that we do. What does this look like practically? Well, to have faith in the day means loving your family and having them say, Happy Mother's Day. Loving your family and having them say, What a wonderful family I'm part of. Have barbecues together and celebrate in weddings. That's loving your family. Working with integrity. Someone saying, You're doing a great job. You're such a great employee. These are things that people are, it's in the day when people acknowledge it. Serving at church, giving to community. You can take the front of your bulletin where we put this picture, divide it in half, and on one side put all those things that you're exercising in faith that people know about. And people say, oh, you're really good at that. Playing music, speaking at church. People know about that. People commend you for it. But that's not the fullness of faith. Because we also exercise faith in the night. Faith in the night isn't so easy to do. For us to understand better, faith in the night is when it's unclear what's going to happen. When we're not sure what we're doing is going to end up with a good harvest or not, but we know it's the right thing to do. It's faith in the night. Sometimes faith in the night looks like this, times in which we are unappreciated, in which we do work and we're not commended for it. When we are kind to someone and they ignore it. Karen mentioned that earlier. When we fight sickness, when we endure exhaustion, no one there, just us, fighting with this feeling that we're just done. There's faith in the night, and there's faith in the day. All of you have experienced it, because that's just what life's about. But the difference between just living a life in the dark or living the life in the day is by exercising faith in God. You see, God is a God of the day and the God of the night. That's the examples that have been given to us in the passage that we looked at. Does this make sense to you? You can nod your heads. It's okay. Does this make sense to you that you have to exercise faith in the night when you don't know what's going to come of it? In all kinds of different dynamics. The blessing is that not all of your faith has to be lived in the night. Reflecting on your own moms, I'm sure there are times in which you realize that they had faith in the day and faith in the night. You can continue this list and list on one side all the things that you do that people acknowledge you for, that you see good work happening in, that's all positive, that you're doing for God. You can live your whole life for God. You can do anything you're doing for God, the way you approach it. On the other side, list things that you're struggling with because you just don't see how God can make sense of this. I could pick out individual examples and have you stand up where I've seen you exercise faith in the night and good things have come of it. For moms and for my mom, she found out, as I talked to her this morning, that her faith exercised in the night translated to faith in the day. In other words, by her exercising over here, her willingness to lend me her red Mustang and then pay for my Bible college with an airplane birthday cake in the middle, she's realized that the long-term effects of love have moved me, in some parts of my life, slowing down not so much, but have moved me from here over here. I kind of want to take my mom for a ride in the back of my motorcycle just to prove to her that it's been a good harvest. Her faith exercise in the night has provided some good things in the day. I challenge you to do this because I hear, we all hear in church community, how various members are struggling with faith in the night. We also celebrate people having faith in the day. Challenges to stay faithful to God. So where's the hope? Where's the promise? Where's the hype? Where's the energy of faith that keeps us going in the night and celebrating in the day? for us when we're engaged in mission, it is future-focused. Verse 39 says, we still have yet to receive our promise. It's counterintuitive or contrarian, this exercise of faith. At one point, we looked at verse 35, where people accepted torture in light of God's promise. Wow, that's faith in the night that sees faith in the day. It's rewarding. There is a better resurrection coming. And it is exhaustive. What do I mean by exhaustive? I mean this. Let's read verse 40 together. Since God had planned something better for us, so that only together with us would they be made perfect. You see, perfection's coming. And it's a joint perfection whereby we together experience this fullness of the whole thing. It's referring to great people of faith, and they're talking about us and saying together we'll be made perfect in Christ. What a beautiful statement. God has something better planned for all His children, and together we'll be made perfect. Well, it's go time. Mission is all the time, and it's go time. Keep running. God will refresh you and replenish you and revitalize you through the day and the night. You see, God's mission and our mission, your mission individually, is to be faithful to God through it all. And ultimately, as the song says, His banner over us says love. I don't know if you've seen that, those TD commercials that show signs of people as they're defined as they're walking down the street, or the Manulife ones that say a certain value. That's the image that is talked about here. God's banner over you, His statement of you, is love through Christ.